This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. There's an art exhibit in Chapel Hill where you can see a man talking about UFOs in Puerto Rico, a woman honoring the victims of the My Lai massacre, and the work of a photographer who turned Chinese propaganda into a subversive critique of the communist state. They represent far-flung corners of the globe, but they're also statements about the local environments. The exhibit is called Local Histories, The Ground We Walk On. It is housed in a new temporary art space that used to be the Chapel Hill Museum on East Franklin Street. Ellen O'Hara Slavik is the curator. She's with me now, along with Cece Stevens, who's a local artist who has a piece in the exhibition. I want to thank you both for being here. It's good to have you.
Thanks
for having us.
Great to be here.
Ellen, where did this idea come from?
Well, I was just driving by one day and noticed the space was closed and thought it would be great to have art there. So I contacted the city council, and it's a long process. I won't get into all the details, but we got an 8-month contract with the art department to do this show, and it seemed great to do a show about local history because it was the Chapel Hill Museum, and the Chapel Hill Historical Society is still in the basement of the building. It's still open. And so I put out a call, and it came together. 150 people submitted work, and we selected over 50 artists. And I selected the artist with Carol McGee. She's the co-curator of the show.
And what's the idea behind this local history?
Well, I asked the artist to consider Alfredo Jarre's idea. Alfredo Jarre is a famous Chilean artist in New York, and he has a statement that he says, place cannot be global. So I did ask all the artists to think about that in making their work and submitting their work. And that idea, to me, means that we all are in a specific place at a specific time, and that even though we live in a global economy and a globalized world, everything is locally specific and unique, and it's very critical to how we form identities and community and civic life and all of those.
One of the great things about the exhibit is the way, of course, all the pieces are from all over the world, mm-hmm. and you can't escape the impact of a global economy and a global social environment, and yet, as you say, it is uniquely local to that place. How it affects that place is unique.
Yes, and it's. I think you're right. It's global in scope, but over half the artists are from the North Carolina region, especially Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Durham. And so even though it is global in scope, there is a greater focus on this region, which is really lovely to see together, the international and the local.
Cece, it couldn't get more local than red clay of North Carolina. Tell us about your exhibit.
Well, I selected the fireplace in this building in part because it's a great structure, but also it is the anchor to me in that space. And when I think about an anchor for me, I'm not originally from North Carolina, but for me, the color of the earth is unique. I'm from Wisconsin. We don't have red clay up there. So I associate with red clay both a real local material, but also the history of industry and agriculture and building materials in North Carolina. So I was really interested in making that connection.
I'm going to ask you to describe it for us, because you use the hearth as the place where the earth spills out. So tell us what it looks like.
So the fireplace has both an area where you would build a fire and also an area where you would store wood. So on the side where the fire is built, there is a mound of red earth spilling out into the space. And the interior of the fireplace is also rubbed with red clay slip. And then on the side that would normally have stove wood stacked are glass jars stacked. And the glass jars are unearthed from local dump sites in Orange County. And inside the jars is water that I've collected from the local creek. And so the whole idea is really just the basic primary elements that, for me, make up home.
And right in the centerpiece of the home, as you suggest, the hearth itself. Did that inspire the work? You saw the hearth and then came up with the idea?
The original idea was to work with the material red clay, but the hearth and the environment definitely impacted how I would present it. All I knew is I came in with buckets of red clay.
You know, Ellen, it's interesting how this building itself has become the inspiration for mm-hmm. the exhibit and the ideas that are generated.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, the space, the fact that it was built as a library and it was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright's students, one of his students, it's always been intended to be a public space for the use of residents and citizens of, of Chapel Hill. And so it was a library, and there's a lot of pieces that involve books. There's a wall of books. There's glass books. There's a column made out of a circular column made out of history books, which was sort of an uncanny coincidence that happens. But I think nothing's really ever a coincidence. But the building did really dictate in hanging the show where things went and how people responded. CeCe's one example, but there's several pieces in that show that are very site responsive, site specific to the building.
It also is a lesson in the intersection of art, public space, and public discourse. Mm-hmm. The fact that that a space is an artistic endeavor at first, it's an architectural design, it becomes a place everybody knows, that it becomes a landmark, and then an artist can go in, have an idea, it inspires the idea, I see it, I have many ideas, and I go, well, I go home, don't I? And I generate more thoughts. They do. I mean, art and place are supposed to work together and generate ideas.
Yes. I mean, to me, those are the most exciting exhibitions. And, you know, I did the bailout show at the old tobacco mill in Durham and the loom shows in the textile mill in Pittsburgh. And to me, they were inspired and driven by the site, by the space. I don't think I would have had this idea if that building hadn't been the public library and the Chapel Hill Museum.
One of the more inspiring installations in this exhibit for me is the work that deals with the My Lai massacre. Will you describe it for us?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an artist, Jessica Almi Pagan, and she went to Vietnam with a group of Americans and Carol Becker, who was the dean at the Art Institute of Chicago at the time. And there was a Vietnamese woman traveling with them, and she became friends with that woman. But the installation basically is a video corner, and there's a video going of a part of her performance in which she scooches across a stage. She's naked, but she almost looks like an amputee, a veteran amputee. Mm-hmm. You can't really tell what you're looking at because you can't see her arms. And she's scooching backwards towards you with this strange sort of, I think they're nylons filled with ceremonial balls dangling from her head. It's a very strange image, very haunting. Mesmerizing. And there are headphones you can put on, and the soundtrack is her pronouncing names that the Vietnamese woman she traveled with, and I'm sorry I can't remember her name, taught her the names of the 504 people who were killed in the My Lai massacre. And when she says the name correctly in Vietnamese, that the Vietnamese woman can recognize it as correct, they move on to the next name. So it's a pretty intense installation. But the most amazing thing about it to me is that the My Lai massacre was happening precisely at the time that Jessica Almi Pagan was born. So there's this merging of these two incredible events, birth and death and massacre and violence and America, Vietnam, in the world at the same time, and now it's housed here at Chapel Hill. It's very interesting.
I think you described well what we see in the video, and we do have the audio, so let's listen to a little bit of that.
Ngô đê, ngô đê, ngô đê, ngô đê, no, ngô, 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 ngô. Ngô, 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 ngô.
When you realize this is an artist who is making an attempt to go back and recapture the names and give to name the victims and get it right before she moves on, someone who had no part in it, as you say, she was born when it happened. It's a really powerful work.
Yeah, it really is.
There's another work I'd like you to talk about. It's a very creative photographer. There are several of these photographs throughout the exhibit of a photographer who went to China, initially apparently at the request of a ministry that was hoping for, I guess, some kind of propaganda pictures, right?
This is Michael Itkoff, and he's actually the co-editor of Daylight Magazine, which is a very important documentary photography magazine. And he also has a book out. He's a pretty established, wonderful photographer. But he was invited by the Chinese government to go to China for 16 days, and he was really struggling with that sort of ethical question of how do I produce ethically conscious or positive images of China that are also critical from an American perspective. And China, as we know, plays this huge role in our world today, in global economy and every other way, human rights issues, the Olympics, everything you can think of. And the images we included are, I think, all really striking. There's a man sitting on a huge pipe. It looks like he's sitting on a cannon, a gargantuan cannon, but he's a sand dredger, which I don't even know what his job really is, but it's this incredibly dramatic photograph. It looks black and white because it's such a dreary landscape, but it's a color photograph. And the two other images are from a mining museum and a oil rigging museum in different regions of China. So they're sort of representations of representations that the official state has produced for these museums, these sort of local museums. So it's very interesting to include this work that's from the state local perspective of another country.
Right. And they're shot. They're really unretouched. So they're that's the photo. But when you look at them, they certainly are a critique of the kind of development and industrialization that's going on, the impact that it's having on the environment.
Yes.
And it gets away with it. And then here you come back to where this contributes to the public discourse. So I see this, and I understand from reading the, you know, what's on the wall, what the story was. He went in, had this crisis of conscience. How do I do this? And I think, good for you. And then I think, oh, wait, we're all faced with that crisis of conscience whenever we buy something from the place where the sand was dredged, where the oil is being pumped in the and the environment's being.
Yes, we are. I mean, and we all live with contradiction. I mean, I wish I could meet a person that isn't living with contradiction and they could tell me how to do it, but I have yet to meet that person. But I do think that show raises so many questions and issues, as well as pleasures and joys.
Well, if we erase contradiction, Ellen, we're both out of business.
Yeah.
So we don't want that, it turns out.
That's
we're
true.
Like, we're like dentists in a way. We promote oral hygiene, but actually we want to see you back in 6 months. Cece, when you, as an artist who contributed to this, what happens to you when you went through it now and you've seen it? What kind of impact did it have on you as an artist to see this
to see the other work in the show?
Yeah.
It's very powerful, in part to see other people, other artists approach especially the site-specific work, but also seeing it as a whole. It's very powerful. There are a lot of provocative works. There are pieces that allow your eyes to just rest. There's one corner that allows you to crawl in under the cardboard and lay down on a mattress.
Tell us about that one, Ellen. That has to do with a snowstorm in North Carolina.
Yeah, this is two women, first-year graduate students, Ashley Florence and Lee Delagarde. This is the first time they've collaborated. They're first-year grad students. They did this in 2 weeks. I find it truly remarkable that they pulled this off. But it's based on a famous 1996 snowstorm. The piece is called Drift, and it's probably about like 40 feet long and 20 feet high, and it's made of cardboard, and it actually looks like a huge snowbank, an undulating snowbank, which is a pretty remarkable thing to accomplish with cardboard. But then you can crawl inside it through the tunnel, and there are these lovely photographs in there of a woman lying down and the window looking outside and this comfortable mattress you can lie down on and just sort of daydream. But they are coming from this place of how extreme weather creates intimate relationships between strangers and neighbors, and you forge new relationships and community involvement through extreme weather, and how we are in a constant state of extreme weather because of climate change, but we don't yet function that way. We're not building new relations. Why is that? Why are we in this denial? And all that's there, but you don't necessarily think of all that when you're in there. I happened to be in the space yesterday, and these grandparents were there with their two-year-old granddaughter, and they just loved it. And they were like, what is this supposed to represent? And it's fun and really lovely, even though it's serious.
And right next door, the sweet scent of tobacco.
Yes, that's one of my favorite pieces in the show. Travis Donovan, he's from North Carolina. He's a second-year MFA student at UNC, and he has a pile of tobacco that's about 3 feet high that he could not manage to buy in North Carolina, so he had to order it from Connecticut, oddly enough. But he built a podium for it that has a fog machine under it. And so every 5 to 10 minutes, the fog machine goes off and fog emanates, comes up slowly through the pile of tobacco. And so the place is filled with a faint scent of tobacco. And the smoke sort of comes across CC's fireplace filled with clay and glass jars filled with water. So it's really beautiful and palpable, like the sense of the history of fires once being put here. And it's actually in the place where the antique fire truck used to stand when it was the Chapel Hill Museum. So it's all kind of perfectly appropriate. And his piece is called Smolder.
Well, and it does also bring us face to face with, again, these contradictions. I mean, the impact of tobacco, both building an economy, but being a scourge in many ways in the way it was produced and the impact of tobacco. And then there are two Confederate flags in black and white, I guess. Probably that's not the best description, but tell us about them.
This is Dave also Brooks, and he's a Durham artist. He grew up somewhere else in North Carolina, but he's now living in Durham. And he does a whole series of these large Confederate flag paintings. They're about 4 feet by 2 feet, I would guess. But they're all different colors. And we chose the black and white one because it just seemed graphically really powerful, and we didn't have that much space. So we picked two of them. But their Confederate flags are very glossy, and they have in the stripes behind the stars are all these images, photographically put on the surface of the painting somehow. I don't know if it's Xerox transfer or what, but there are all these images throughout history, and it's called something like In My Family's Backyard or The Backyard of My Family's Histories. I can't remember the subtitle. But he has an index that hangs next to each of these paintings that tells you exactly what you're looking at in these images. So there's like Martin Luther King delivering a speech or the front porch where he and his family would sit around in the summers. But he talks about how he's not answering the question or solving the dilemma of the Confederate flag. He's raising questions because he grew up with people who both loathed and loved the Confederate flag. So I find that very interesting.
Yeah, wrestling with contradiction is very deeply embedded in those two. I've only got about 30 seconds left, but I do want you to talk about the photographs downstairs that reflect women in very different parts of the world and how they adorn their front steps.
Yes, this is also by Jessica Almay Pagan, who did the video upstairs. There's two large photographs from Puerto Rico, where she is now a professor. And they are, one image is looks like a huge white mountain, and it's actually a salt flat. And when she was an artist in residence there, she did these drawings outside of her door on the street, on the cobblestone street, using salt. And then when she was an artist in residence in India a year or two later, she discovered that women there do drawings very similar to the drawings she was doing in Puerto Rico with rice flour. And they get washed away by the rain and wind, and birds eat them. And they're just a beautiful, it's a beautiful connection between two really different places by one artist.
It's a great exhibit. Go see it. Thank you both for being with us
You're
today.
Welcome. The opening's tonight, 5 to 9.
Opening? I was just about to say.
Sorry.
Ellen O'Harris-Lavick is curator of the exhibition Local Histories, The Ground We Walk on display at 523 East Franklin Street. It used to be the Chapel Hill Museum in Chapel Hill. C.C. Stevens, a local artist with a piece in that exhibit. And if you hadn't heard already, you are welcome to a reception tonight, 5 to 9 p.m. Just ahead, musician Robert Griffin plays in our studio. Stay with us on The State of Things.